broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. What's over
only we had. Now, if you're a fan of the piece, maybe you love the show, but there are a lot of people out there today complaining about the vocal quality.
You've changed a little bit since you've become president.
Well, I'm a lot greater, that's for sure.
Well, the huge part of our game plan was really putting the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands.
Nappy is racial.
Yes, sir.
Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. A news, talk, and entertainment show that has no agenda other than getting to the,
well,
truth. It's our bitch. We go places other talk shows just can't go. That's pretty much why other talk shows all do the same show. You know, you go from one talk show to the next talk show. They're all doing the same show out there. Why is that? Because they can't go where we go. Yeah. All right. Now, the Packers win the Super Bowl, as you may or may not know. Christine Aguilera flubbed the national anthem. The poor kid. We'll talk about that. The Black Eyed Peas, apparently they sucked at halftime. I couldn't tell. I sort of enjoyed it, but I'm willing to go with the crowd. TSA screeners get union rights. Plus, should parents be punished by the state when their kids are caught sexting? Jay Santos and Margaret Gray join us on the show tonight. We have Margaret Gray, in fact, in just a couple of minutes to talk about the interview between Bill O'Reilly and the interview of President Obama by Bill O'Reilly. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And tonight in our affiliate spotlight, our great friends in Detroit, WDTW 1310 AM, and in Yakima, Washington, KBBO 980 AM, two great stations on the Phil Hendry Network. And visit us on our website at philhendryshow.com. With a backstage pass, you have the live streaming video of the show right now. You also have access to our news feed. You have access to our archives. You have access to all of our podcasts, our daily show podcasts, as well as our classic Phil, and email from me, Phil Hendry. And by the way, go into our shop. We're selling our Phil Hendry Show classic shot glasses, man, just in time for, just in time for Father's Day. 877-876-PHIL, the number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So Bill O'Reilly interviewed President Obama before the Super Bowl. President Obama said that once his Bears lost, he didn't really pick sides in the game. He sat down with, sounded almost like I was having a heart attack. I wasn't. I was throwing up. No, he sat down with President Obama during the pregame, and the interview, which was preceded by a series of advertisements and advertisement programming hybrids sponsored by E-Trade and Pizza Hut, showed the O'Reilly Factor host and the president sitting in the White House one-on-one. Let's listen to just a couple of clips here. Fox News' Bill O'Reilly asked some fairly softball questions to President Obama. Here is one of them.
What is it about the job that has surprised you the most that you weren't prepared for coming in here?
You know, I think that the thing you understand intellectually, but you don't understand in your gut until you're in the job, is that every decision that comes to my desk is something that nobody else has been able to solve. The easy stuff gets solved somewhere by somebody else.
Margaret Gray is joining us now. Margaret is with the Dicklin Syndicate. She writes the nationally syndicated column, A Little Bird Told Me. And while I said, Margaret, there that those were softball questions, it got a little bit harder, and it got a little bit more, a little bit more invasive in your mind?
Well, I think you're using a very kind word, Phil. I thought that the interview itself, while it might have appeared to some people as softball, in point of fact, I don't think the president has ever been dealt with in a more rude fashion. I thought O'Reilly was out of line completely with some of his questions, and I am wondering when the actual tenor of this interview is going to be hitting the American people and when we're going to start talking about that, because from my way of thinking, I know that presidents are going to be interviewed by journalists. I'm an objective journalist. I'm an objective journalist, and I can tell you that President Obama is a better president than, let's say, Ronald Reagan. Some people may say that that is my opinion. It really isn't. That is my objective assessment of the two presidencies.
What do you call an opinion, then?
I call an opinion something that you feel. My objective intellectual assessment is that Obama was a better president. O'Reilly is not objective. Bill O'Reilly has opinions. And he's entitled to those opinions, Phil, but I think what happened before that football game...
All right, let's talk a little bit about this, because we don't have a lot of audio from the interview, but the fact is... Bill O'Reilly is from a what some people consider to be a conservative entity, Fox News. The president is a Democrat. Now, at 3 minutes in, you say you saw what?
Well, I think there was an awful lot of very, very obvious telegraphing of his displeasure with President Obama. I did not like the fact that Mr. O'Reilly, and for whatever reason, maybe his the people that watch him think it's funny. Perhaps the people that are Fox News fans don't mind seeing Barack Obama disrespected because he is black.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Are you saying that Fox News fans, you're giving this thing,
Well, you don't want me to use the R word. I'm not saying racist. I'm saying racially insensitive because he's a black president. So there isn't really that much to lose.
So you're telling me that O'Reilly and the Fox News fans in general are going to treat him, Obama, a little bit more roughly because he's black?
Phil, you have your way of describing it. I have mine. Let's just agree to disagree. Let's just say this. Bill O'Reilly has no stake in treating Obama with any kind of respect. He's going to lose points with his audience. He's obviously going to lose points with his employers. He doesn't probably like Obama to begin with as a human being. So there isn't any real reason for O'Reilly to treat Obama well. And that's why we saw what we saw yesterday. This very disrespectful, intrusive, rude, and I think inappropriate interview by Bill O'Reilly of President Obama.
All right, you mentioned something 3 minutes in. Do you want to get into that?
Well, what was obvious to everyone is that O'Reilly was, because I think Bill O'Reilly thinks that Bill O'Reilly is a wit. Perhaps he thinks he's a little bit funnier than he is. He scratches his nose with his middle finger, which is a very obvious way of being juvenile and at the same time telegraphing your displeasure with the president. Now, if Bill O'Reilly had any real guts, he would have simply said to Obama, you know something, I don't like you. I don't like you at all.
Well, how likely is it that he's going to do that? I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you, but he's going to ask him some challenging questions, and you say that they were more than challenging, they were rude. And he's going to express opinions, perhaps, that are contrary to the president's, but how likely is it that any interviewer is going to say to a president, I don't like you?
Well, I'm telling you, he used his middle finger to scratch his nose. And, I don't know if anything...
Well, that could be or might not be, I don't know, an expression of his displeasure. You're saying that Mr. O'Reilly scratched his nose with his middle finger to flip off the president?
Well, let me ask you something. If you're a professional broadcaster and you know that the camera is on you, and you've been doing interviews like this all of your life, and the President of the United States is sitting there, and here is your big chance to be a big man and send the message to all of your listeners that you're not intimidated by a president, okay? And so perhaps when Obama was looking down, and I think it was at a point when the president was rather pensive about something, O'Reilly then starts scratching his nose with his middle finger. And Phil, I am telling you, the fingers to the side of the middle finger were curled all the way back into the palm. So there was no mistaking this middle finger very prominently, slowly going up and down his nose. Now, I am telling you...
All right, I didn't see the interview. And I'm taking your word for this.
I am telling you, I have never in my life seen anything so rude. And I'll tell you something else. It wasn't just the finger. It was the entire tenor of the interview from beginning to end that smacked of condescension, almost a, if you will, almost the condescension of a schoolmaster talking to the young, newly freed black child.
All right, again, this is a there's an awful lot of hyperbole that you're throwing in here.
What is it that you're uncomfortable with?
What I'm saying is this. What we perceive to be the truth and what we think, what is actually the truth, they could be two different things. You say that O'Reilly scratched his nose with his middle finger. Can you give me an example in terms of his questioning?
Absolutely, yes.
All right, what you mean?
Well, I think that O'Reilly's questions were inappropriate. What do you know about it? He used this phrase over and over again. What do you know about, for instance, I'll give an example. In this last clip, he's asking the President of the United States, you know, really a question, Phil, that is for a child. What do you know about football? What do you know? As if he's talking to some ignoramus.
Well, the huge part of our game plan was really putting the ball in there.
That's not it, bud. I apologize.
Did a great
We're
job
going to the cut three here of the O'Reilly or cut four. This is the Super Bowl question.
Who's
going to
win the game? Come on.
Bill, here's the thing. Once my Bears lost, I don't pick sides.
So you don't care?
Well, no, I do care. I want a great game.
Listen,
I want a great game.
You don't care?
These are pretty evenly matched.
All right, hold on.
I think that Green Bay is probably a little faster. Steelers got a little more experience. I think the Steelers not having their starting center is something they got to be worried about.
Now, will you actually watch the game? Because I know you'll be partying tonight. J. Lo's going
to
be here. Get out of here. She's all frightened her.
What are you talking about?
Did you hear that? Are you actually going to watch the game? As if he's talking to an idiot. And then later on in the clip, Phil, and you don't hear it, he says, what do you know about football, huh? What do you know? Phil, I know that a great many people do not like Barack Obama. I'll also tell you that a great many people do like him. But when he sits down for an interview on national television with one of the countries at that time, premier news analysts and commentators, and is treated with such rudeness and spoken to as if he is someone's field hand. I think someone has to say something about it. It was a disgrace. If I was the head of Fox, I would censor Mr. Riley, but it's not going to happen because Rupert Murdoch heads up Fox, and we all know what he is.
Well, I don't know that we do all know what he is. What is that?
He doesn't like Obama. He hates Obama. So he's not about to censor O'Reilly. I think we've reached a new low. I think you can be a conservative and treat the President of the United States with respect. You don't talk to a president, and you certainly don't use your middle finger in the fashion that Bill O'Reilly did in front of a President of the United States.
Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. We're talking here with Margaret Gray about the interview last night between Bill O'Reilly and Barack Obama. And Margaret, among other things, is saying that the O'Reilly's body language was the use of the middle finger. Did you see anything else?
There were some things toward the end of the interview where O'Reilly was once again using his body language in a very insulting way. And again, Phil, these questions he's asking, what do you know about it? Who do you think you are? And the look on O'Reilly's face, one of contorted sort of condescension, it really was an embarrassing moment. And I think somewhere along the line, there has to be some recompense. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether O'Reilly gets a reprimand, whether he loses his job or what. But it was a disgrace.
All right. Margaret Gray talking about the interview with Barack Obama, one that I did not see with Bill O'Reilly. Some 17 million people did tune in, and she says it was a disgrace. O'Reilly using his middle finger to scratch his nose at times. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And we'll get back here to talk more about Bill O'Reilly and Barack Obama on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877-877 column, A Little Bird Told Me. And we're talking about last night's interview between Bill O'Reilly and, or yesterday afternoon's interview between Bill O'Reilly and President Obama. What you're describing here, Margaret, is I didn't see the damn thing, and I guess a lot of people didn't see it. This sounds like it should have made some news. Why didn't it?
Well, there's no question in my mind why it didn't make any news. It's because of the fact that it was such an absolute insult to the president, and potentially was an embarrassment to Fox News and Bill O'Reilly. There's no question in my mind that they most certainly did their very best to suppress or to scrub some of these segments. I talked to Jim Chadell over at TMZ. He didn't have any of the clips. I talked to a couple of other people at Radar Online. They didn't have any of the clips. I think Fox did their very best to suppress many of the aspects of this interview with Bill O'Reilly, with President Obama, especially the scratching of the nose with the middle finger, the reaching down. And so this is without parallel in any televised interview. The very first televised interview with the President of the United States, as you know, Phil, was Walter Cronkite talking to John Kennedy. And that interview, by the way, took place just days before the assassination of the president. This would have been an utter scandal to see Walter Cronkite, halfway through that interview, scratching his nose prominently with his middle finger, or reaching into his pants or his pocket, as O'Reilly did.
This is a claim that you made while we were in the break. He reached into his pocket and did what?
O'Reilly pretended as if he was reaching for something in his pocket. But he was very obviously pushing his hand further and further across the panel. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, it didn't look as if he was necessarily trying to get something out of his pocket, as it looked as if he was, and very clumsily and very obviously, trying to touch himself in a way. So
you're kidding me.
No, I am not. And this happened toward the very end of the interview. There was, and again, this was done when President Obama was in a very pensive moment. He was looking down. His eyes were averted. This is the President of the United States. And Bill O'Reilly thinks he's being funny. I think it shows that at least the O'Reilly faction of the Republican Party is very juvenile. And they think they can get away with murder, too.
All right. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray on the line with us. Here is one of the questions O'Reilly asks President Obama during this interview that we're talking about, an interview that Margaret says was one of the very rough on the president.
What is it about the job that has surprised you the most that you weren't prepared for coming in here?
Now, listen.
No, I think that the thing you
already
understand intellectually, but you don't understand in your gut until you're in the job, is that every decision that comes to my desk is something that nobody else has been able to solve. The easy stuff gets solved somewhere
O'Reilly
by somebody else.
Time,
all right, now I didn't hear.
No, hold on. O'Reilly, you can hear, is very aggressive. He throws the prison up. What is it about this job? What is it? There is an aggression. There is a very pointed way. I want to play this again for you.
What is it about the job that has surprised you the most that you weren't prepared for coming in here?
If we had, and as you know, Bill O'Reilly uses that body language, woman. I also use a couple of people from the University of Santa Barbara who do voice and analysis. The voice analysis on that, Phil, is of a pugnacious man who's trying to provoke a fight. What is it? What is it? You can imagine O'Reilly sort of scrunching his face up in that very classic Irish pugilistic pose. Listen.
What is it about the job that has surprised you the most that you weren't prepared for coming in here?
So do you hear that? What is it about the job? It's a challenge.
Well, what I hear is a very inquisitive man. Not inquisitive, but a guy that wants to relax.
No, no. What you're hearing is a pushy man. What is it? Here is the other clip I wanted to play.
You've changed a little bit since you've become president.
Well, I'm a lot grayer, that's for sure.
Every president does.
All right, see, so President Obama was trying to be friendly there. and O'Reilly blows him up. But don't bore me with your retort. Let's get to what it is we want to talk about.
Margaret Gray with us as she analyzes what she says was an extremely rude interview by Bill O'Reilly of Barack Obama. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL here, and Margaret Gray back with us as we talk about the O'Reilly interview with President Barack Obama. Again, an interview with such far-reaching implications, I would think, for the way O'Reilly talked to the president and the rude manner in which his body language was communicated, and yet we haven't heard any clips. We haven't seen any clips.
Well, again, Phil, I think this is the influence of the Fox television network. They have kept these clips away from the public. And I don't think, to be honest with you, that if people saw these clips who are supporters of Bill O'Reilly and Fox, I don't think they want to talk about it. I know I wouldn't want to. And I certainly would not want anyone like me on the air talking about it. So better to not mention it at all than to bring it out, because it's only going to reflect poorly on Mr. Murdoch. Now, the finger, the hand in the pants, the laughter, the bullying, all of these things, Mr. O'Reilly got away with because I think there is a general silence in the country about it.
What about the president's supporters? What about President Obama's supporters, people that support him, people that think that he is a great president, or at least he's a hardworking president? People like you. You're on my show right now.
We have been bullied so much, and we have been threatened so much that a lot of people are frightened, Phil. I got to tell you something. Not everyone has the courage that I have. I've got some guts, Phil. No one tells me to shut up. You know that, and I know that.
All right. I mean, I'll give you that, you know.
Yeah, but most people who are supporters of President Obama do not have the intestinal fortitude to go toe-to-toe with the kind of vicious people that have attacked Obama. They say he's born in another country. They call him a communist. They attribute every kind of insult to him. They absolutely and with really no concern for our country at all, flip him off, use the witch doctor thing, call him jigaboo, call him spade.
I haven't heard those. Now, hold on for a minute. I haven't heard those kinds of racial terms.
Oh, well, what do you watch? Are you watching Fox or not?
Yes, I watch Fox, and I've never heard terms like jigaboo, and I've never heard terms like spade.
Well, I don't know who you're watching, but those words are used almost every day on Fox. Now,
Whoa. If I heard words like that on Fox, if I heard words like that anywhere, I think if the audience heard words like that anywhere, they'd report it. Okay?
But, Phil, by going after O'Reilly with the truth tonight, I'm putting myself in harm's way. But angry conservatives are going to definitely not like what I'm saying. But I happen to be brave enough to speak out. That's all I'm saying. And
I know what you're saying, that you're brave enough to speak out and all of that, but the fact of the matter remains, I've never heard these words.
Is this what's getting you upset, the fact that I brought up those two words?
Yeah, that's getting me upset, because I haven't heard them, and I don't know, unless you've got tape recordings of them, or tape recordings of people saying those words, I don't know what you're talking about.
Bill, I can assure you that on Fox every day, there is some blackface sketch that's going on. The word... maybe not that word, jigaboo, but words like jig and...
Well, what are you saying? Are we taking this out of context now?
I am telling you, and I don't want to say this too loudly, that Fox Television sent Bill O'Reilly out there yesterday to get in his shots, to have his fun, and then to get out of there.
Well, until I hear these interviews, I can tell you right now, I can't believe any of it, all right? And to say that...
I'm the only one that has the guts to say these things, Phil. There's no one else. I'm it. I'm the only one with the guts to say what I'm saying.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray here on the Phil Hendry Show. And I'll tell you what, I'd like to see clips of this. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Well, you know, I've been doing an entertainment radio show for 20 years. 20 years I've been doing an entertainment-style radio show. And for 20 years, I've seen my industry going the other direction. For 20 years, I've seen my industry being taken over by political talk. Today, to get hired to do a radio show, you don't have to have talent. You just have to have the right opinion. That's what it takes to be hired in radio today to do a radio show. You don't have to have any experience. You don't have to have ever done a radio show. You don't have to particularly have a good voice. You just have to have the right opinion. If the radio station is conservative, you must be a conservative. If it's liberal, you must be a liberal. But you don't have to have experience. You don't have to have any entertainment chops. You don't have to have any storytelling ability. You really don't have to have any ability at all other than to have the right opinion and to be able to very forcefully and very repetitively deliver it. Now, I'm not saying that I'm one or the other. I'm not here to bash Republicans. I'm not here to bash liberals. But I am here to bash an industry that has been co-opted by people who would rather have the right opinion on their radio station than good entertainers. I've dealt with it myself. I've dealt with radio stations who would rather I be a certain kind of thing, a liberal or a conservative, than a professional. They would rather I be a liberal or conservative than a broadcaster, than an entertainer. And it has become increasingly difficult to do that in the horrible, horrible times we live in as broadcasters. This is the worst time that I've ever seen in radio, and I've been in it since 1973. The worst period that I've ever seen. There are no more professionals. There are no more broadcasters. There are just hacks who are doing political shows. Can you imagine 24/7, all you saw on television, one political show after the next? What would you do? Well, you'd stop watching TV, wouldn't you? But radio has 24/7 political shows, not just on one station, but on every radio station across the land, political talk. And it's all the same thing. I mean, look, I may not be an Obama fan. What difference does it make? I'm an Obama fan. I'm not an Obama fan. Hell, I might think he's the worst guy in the world. But even I would get bored listening to him being beat up every bloody day on every bloody station in every city in this country, every damn radio show you listen to. I'm not talking here, guys, about not liking conservatives. I'm fine with conservatives. What I'm talking about is a little variety. Just a little something different. I mean, it gets to the point today, I'm listening to a very nice guy, a guy that I like a lot, Mark Levin, and a man who has publicly praised me, and I thank him for that. But my God, Mark, your take on Egypt is unbelievable. I thought I was hearing about the blood of tyrants fertilizing the tree of liberty, and I'm listening to guys making excuses for Mubarak. Look, I don't care. Mubarak, you know, keep him in there as far as I'm concerned. Keep him there. Whatever's good. But, I mean, even the opinions that are being expressed are no longer honest. They're not even honest anymore. They have to just fit into a certain kind of of paradigm, so they're consistent. In other words, if I am against Obama, then I got to be against everything that he supports, so therefore I have to be against removing Mubarak, even if removing Mubarak was the Jeffersonian thing to do. To be perfectly honest with you, yes, it is. Thomas Jefferson, he was in love with the French Revolution. Thomas Jefferson loved the French Revolution in all of its violent extremes, and the French Revolution was a violent revolution. The French Revolution was the epitome of eating what they say about all revolutions, that they eat their young, and they do. Because by the end of the French Revolution, the people that started the French Revolution had gone to the guillotine. Not just the king, not just the queen, but everybody. It was a violent revolution that saw the murder of innocent people before it was over with. And Thomas Jefferson's philosophy was, you know what? Bad things happen when we're trying to get good things accomplished. I mean, that's bad, but you know what? That's just what's going to happen. That was Jefferson. But, I mean, I'm not even here to talk about that, man. I don't care. I mean, it's fine. I think Mark Levin is a great guy. He's a smart guy. He writes great books. But all the time with the same kind of radio, not just Mark, whether it's Rush, who was the originator of conservative radio and has all the passes in the world from Phil Hendry, but 9, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 100 people later, man, all of them doing the same thing on all of the radio stations. No difference. Nobody trying to do the art of broadcasting. Have you ever heard of that phrase? When I came up, we used to call it the art of broadcasting. The art of broadcasting, where you would create. I came up at a time, we had a guy named Wolfman Jack, we had Klavan and Finch, we had a lot of very creative people. Howard. Bubba. There's people I love in this business, but there's hardly any of them. And doing talk radio. Trying to be do an entertainment product, a satire on talk radio, and you would think that the very people that you are in business with, you would think the very people who are the broadcasters, right? The very people who would understand the art that you're doing, these people don't even get it. Because they're so far removed, they're like a generation or two removed from the very idea that you are an entertainer on radio. All you are is a talking hack. And you got to be politically the right philosophy. And then we'll talk about all this other bull crap about what you're going to do with this hippie stuff called entertainment. I mean, I have never, ever seen the radio industry in worse shape. Worse shape. Now, I know there's people listening who are happy with their radio. That's good. I'm glad. You know, you're happy with the radio that you listen to. You should be. But I'm just telling you right now, you don't have any. You talk about no choices. You talk about the government. Government's not going to take any choices away from you, folks. The government's not taking any choices away from you. Broadcasters are taking choices away from you. The very people that run this industry are taking your choices away from you. They're taking your choices away from you. They're not hiring entertainers. They're not hiring performers. They're not hiring satirists or humorists or monologists. They're just hiring liberals or conservatives. Liberals or conservatives. Liberals or conservatives. Doesn't matter whether they know how to eat with their fork and a spoon. It doesn't matter whether they know how to wash themselves in the morning. It doesn't matter whether they know any of these things. And look, they're liberal or conservative. And I bring them to the radio station, sit them down, and have them do the liberal conservative thing. Some of them probably don't even know how to wipe themselves, but they can come in and do liberal or conservative. Now, I don't mean to hit this so hard, you guys, but I, you know, this has been on my mind for a long time. And I, you know, if anybody's got a right to say it, I do. Because I've given my whole life to this industry and I've watched it bleed away. I don't know these people that are on the air anymore. I came up with pros. Some of these cats, though, they don't have any radio background. I don't know who the hell these clowns are. Well, they used to be lawyers, or they used to be politicians, or they used to be the mayor of some city. And I'm sure that someone has blown enough smoke up their ass where they think they're really special. And, you know, it really helps, man, if you've got 24/7 an entire radio station, an entire company just throwing its weight behind your mediocre ass. Well, then sure, yeah, I'm sure you're going to get a little bit of an audience, and I bet you think you're pretty special. But, you know, try it from my side of the glass, okay? Try doing what I do, which is a satire which is the same thing as having a T-shirt, a tie-dye T-shirt shop in the middle of a car parts store. And the guy says, you know, I really like your T-shirts, Phil. Come on into my car parts store. I'll give you the corner of the building, and you can do your T-shirts there. Gee, thanks a lot, man. Well, who the hell's going to be coming into a car parts store to buy T-shirts? To the extent that people do come in to any radio station that I'm on in America and listen to me, it's a miracle, I'm telling you. A miracle. To the extent that I get any audience at all, it's a bloody miracle. Because the industry, the radio industry that we are witnessing together is not going in Phil Henry's direction. It's going the opposite direction. It's going away from entertainment. It's going toward hack. It's going toward one-dimensional opinion proffering. It's going toward just this sort of discount department store approach to political talk. Just whatever, you know, just, is it conservative? Yeah. Is it liberal? Yeah. Okay, we got it. Go ahead, throw it out there, man. It doesn't matter whether it's smart, informed, it doesn't make any difference. I know that probably most people listening to me right now don't even know what the hell it is I'm talking about, but it sounds like Phil's really upset about something, so let's listen to him. Okay, that's probably, you know, a good enough reason. But, you know, I got to tell you, and I'll tell you one other thing, too. And this is the worst part of it, man. I could make all the sense in the world, which I am making, by the way. I'm making complete sense right now. It won't matter. It won't matter. Because tomorrow, things will be the same. And, you know, maybe we'll be on this radio station or we won't. I don't know. You know, I mean, the idea of actually speaking real truth. Now, I'm laying some truth on you right now. You know, people say they like the truth, but do they really? Nah, not really. Not if it's bad news or irritating or upsetting. No, we don't really like it. But I'm just telling you right now, what I do as an entertainer and as a performer is being pushed out of the scene. It's just being elbowed out of the scene. It's just not being supported at all. There's nobody, I can't think of anybody outside of Phil Henry that is approaching any kind of a entertainment paradigm, a platform, a presentation in talk radio other than Morning Drive, you know. So we, you know, we got to keep pushing it and humping it and doing our very best. But I got to tell you something, man. I walked in here tonight and I realize something's got to be done, because what I do necessitates audience interaction. And I've been doing this long enough to know that what we do well. And what we do right. What I am not getting is an industry that is opening its arms enough to embrace what Phil Henry does. And if you don't think folks, that this is something that's reasonable for me to ask for, if I had a nickel for every general manager, program director, radio talent, or whoever you want to comes up to me and says, oh, I'm a big Phil Henry fan. Oh, I love you, Phil. I got guys that are radio writers. You're the greatest thing in the history of this business. I got cats that are on the radio. I just mentioned Mark Levin, great guy, Sean Hannity, you name it. All these guys, what you do, Phil, is singularly unique. It's fantastic. Program directors, gosh, I wish I could hire you on my station. Why the hell don't you, man? Well, we're doing the liberal conservative thing. Well, who ain't? But what you do, man, I mean, the rich are getting richer. There's a guy I know who's got himself a conservative talk show. This guy doesn't need the money. He sure as hell doesn't need the exposure. He works in the Hollywood business as a manager, producer, but he got himself a conservative talk show. Why? Because he's a conservative and he wants to get in on this Obama bashing. Okay, fine. How many more do we need, man? Is that enough? Or we got about six more of these guys? And he could be the other way. He could be a liberal. He could be some guy that, you know, hates everything about Fox News. Same difference. It's two sides to the same coin. It's two sides to the same dull, rotten coin. If coins could be rotten, which they can't. Well, I guess they could. So I say this with the greatest of respect to you guys, that this is an industry. This is an art, broadcasting. This is not liberal or conservative. This is not about, I mean, I understand that that's what one of the things you can get when you listen to the radio. There's a lot of things you can get. But the day part that I'm working here and the format that I'm working here needs to have a certain kind of way to incorporate what we do. And I'm looking at a format, talk radio, which is that we now call it spoken word, which is going further and further and further away from the performance platform and further and further and further away from the art of broadcasting. And it's just becoming more of a place where just throw any hack in there behind the microphone, any hack at all. Fred Thompson. How'd you like him? Michael Brent. It doesn't matter. These guys have no experience. Throw them in there, and if they suck, we'll throw another hack in there. Do we hire a broadcaster? Do we try to present something that's presentable? No. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
And speaking of it all, Michael, I mean, there are a number of lawmakers, Democrats and Republicans.
It's an interesting thing you do in politics.
Joining me now to talk about this and the nation's real problem of joblessness, the Reverend Al Sharpton.
As I was walking towards the scene, I just saw two women.
Did you really write this yourself with a typewriter?
My butt would be raw.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast with this groundbreaking presentation, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The only news, talk, and entertainment show where truth is our bitch on this show. And that's it. And, and I'll tell you what, we can find a lot of new and interesting ways to say the following phrase and make it seem like it's the most original thing in the world. You know what the problem with the country is? Why, there's too many corrupt people. Yes, that's right. There's just too many corrupt people. Oh, yeah. 877-876 is the 877-876-PHIL is our number here. And Dr. Ron Tarner is going to join us from the Mountain Meadow Observatory that is in Colorado. And Dr. Tarner has been on our program before. The variety of questions involving the environment and more to the point, this question of global warming. And I don't want to upset the doctor. I don't mean to say question, Dr. Tarner. You understand that, right?
No, I understand that there is still a fair amount of skepticism among the American people. It was disappointing to see the numbers today that you were talking about.
Well, the numbers are these. The number of Americans, and this is from a poll conducted by the Pew Research Center, the number of Americans who believe there is solid evidence that the Earth is warming because of pollution is at its lowest point in 3 years, according to this survey that was released on Thursday. Now, this is a poll of 1,500 adults by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press.
Well, that sounds very political, doesn't it?
Well, it does a little bit, but let's look at this. It says they found that only 57% believe there's a strong scientific evidence that the Earth has gotten warmer over the past few decades, and as a result, people are viewing the problem as less serious, which is down from 77%. So that means, essentially, people who believe that global warming, man-made global warming, or any kind of global warming, being a serious problem is down 20% from 77%. It's down 20% over the last 3 years to 57%. This is the steepest drop in recent memory. The steepest drop occurred during the last year as Congress and the Obama administration have taken steps to control heat-trapping emissions for the first time. So what do you make of this? And I know that you've worked a long time on this question, and you worked with Vice President Gore. How do you feel now that the American people seem to be less prone to believe this?
Well, it's very disappointing information. If what that poll is saying is a fact, right now, when the United States Congress and President Obama have taken the most positive steps that have been taken by any American president since perhaps the 70s, when it comes to the environment, President Obama and the United States Congress taking steps to control emissions. And just as we're beginning to see the political foot move forward, suddenly the American people have issued a proclamation in the form of this poll of some level of disrespect for Vice President Gore. I don't know what it's from. I don't know if it's an Obama backlash. I suspect that it is. But for those of us who've worked long and hard on the question of global warming being man-made and being a very imminent danger to all of us, you heard what Gordon Brown said the other day, that we're going to see a calamity that the human race hasn't faced since the dinosaurs went extinct. And the American people have decided to suddenly get dumb, if you'll pardon the expression, on this issue.
Well, when you say they've suddenly decided to get dumb, what really do you believe is happening here? Is this a political statement? They don't like what the Congress is doing?
Well, there's a combination of a lot of this, Phil. First of all, it is a basic disrespect, I think, of a man who's given his life to public service, and that is Vice President Al Gore. People don't like him because he is a very bright man, and we tend not to like people who are intelligent and know that they're intelligent and try to help us with our problems because we feel that they are, there's that expression they used to use on Malcolm in the Middle, that you're not the boss of me, you know, and sometimes we want to say that, you know, Al Gore, you're not the boss of me. Well, Al Gore isn't trying to be the boss of B. Al Gore is trying to be a public servant. He's trying to help a people, the American people, who have a tough time with certain equations and certain problems. He's trying to guide us through this, and we've turned around, and like a little child who wants to say, you're not the boss of B, we've kicked him in the shin and told him to go, you know, go to hell, or however we say these things.
Well, yeah, but that seems so. The American people have a basic mistrust and distrust of Al Gore. He's a very political person. President Obama is a very political person. He's the president. The Congress is a very, very political body. They're the Congress. What about the scientists? What are they saying? You know,
You know what the scientists have been saying. I've been talking about global warming for the last 2 years, and when I tell people about global warming and the work that Al Gore has been doing, their eyes glaze over, and you would think that they are bored almost beyond belief. And I've got the very same materials that Vice President Gore has used, and I want to remind you, Phil, lest anyone think that Vice President Gore doesn't know what he's talking about. He did win an Academy Award, and I know that that's not a scientific award.
Well, yeah, an Academy Award from Hollywood.
Well, it's not a scientific award, but it's an award that they gave out to him because his movie, Inconvenient Truth, was a great movie. You don't deny it was a great movie, do you?
You know, I didn't see it. Some people make fun of it because they call it Al's slideshow.
No, I'm not interested in the childish rejoinders about. But did you see it?
I did not see it. No.
Well, I don't hardly think you could comment that on the viability of the global warming theory unless you saw Al's movie.
Well, I'm not commenting on it necessarily, Dr. Turner. I'm just saying I agree with a lot of American people from this perspective. I don't hear the scientific debate that I want to hear. I hear movie stars, and I hear Al Gore, and I hear President Obama, and I hear the Congress. And
well, I'm a scientist. Now, that's why you have me on the program, right?
Yes, you're a scientist.
And I'm telling you that Mr. Gore's movie, The Inconvenient Truth, spells it out in black and white, as clearly as you can. I worked on this problem. I was a part of the team that helped Al Gore put together his data on global warming. I've even visited him at his home, and I've met his family. So I'm about as close as you could get to Al Gore, and I know, and I'm one scientist who knows that if we don't do something about global warming, we're going to regret the day we ever decided to have children. That's number one. Do you have children, Phil?
Well, I've got stepchildren, and I don't know what that means when you say that.
You're going to regret the day that they were ever decided to be had by, you know, your wife and whoever she was married to. And I'm not that I've seen.
All right, okay. Forget about my kids. What about people that have their own kids? You're making a pretty bold statement there.
If we don't do something about bad bait, global morbing, we are going to regret the day that we ever decided to have children, because our children are going to live in a wasteland that is dry, cracked earth, very little water, the heat coming from an atmosphere where the ozone layer has opened up and is allowing radiating heat and sunshine through to the point where it will burn the flesh. You've heard the horror stories.
Well, see, Dr. Tarner, to me, that's all that this has been. A lot of horror stories, a lot of people saying that this horrible thing's going to happen, flooding and these bad storms. And I heard some idiot talking the other day about the forest fire. Oh, that's global warming, you know.
When you say idiot, who are you talking about?
It was somebody like some congresswoman, I don't know.
Well, which one was it? Because we've got some great people in the Congress working on this. And I think you need to be very careful, Phil, how you portray people who have worked very hard on helping, I'm Dr. Tarner, Mr. Gore, although I will tell you that Al Gore is so well-versed in this, sometimes I slip up and call him doctor, because he has that kind of a bind that one could say, you might as well give him a medical degree or a scientific degree right now. That's how brilliant he is. And Al Gore and myself and others are trying to help the people through this problem. We're trying to hold the hands of the American people and baby step them through this so that they could get to the end of this tunnel that is increasingly occupied by a gasoline fire. If you wanted to give it an image, Al Gore is holding on to the American people by the hand, and the American people are a little tiny kid, and there is a gasoline fire that is flaming through the tunnel, and Al is trying to help this child through it.
And Al Gore is the American people a little kid, and Al Gore is our protector then?
By coming out with this information, absolutely.
And there is a gasoline fire at one end of the tunnel that is about to incinerate us, and he's trying to get us through it.
Well, yeah, and you sound incredulous.
I just think that your imagery there may be a bit extreme.
Let's put it down to the most basic thing that I can. I'm a scientist. You're not a scientist. The people that are listening to you right now are most likely not scientists. I am a scientist. If I say, as a scientist, that I have done the work, I've looked at the computer models, and I see that the human race is about to become incinerated by no less than a stream of napalm dropped from an American military jet.
And well, what does that image mean?
Well, I think it's very appropriate. I mean, global warming, much of it has been contributed to by the United States. It's almost as if the U.S. is using napalm all over again.
Well, I have very, very, very strong reservations about what you said, sir.
Mr. Henry, I'm not trying to offend anyone. I am using this image because it's very true.
Well, to say that America is trying to napalm the world all over again, I've got a very, very strong disagreement with you on that. Dr. Ron Tarner joins us, 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Tarner is commenting on how 20% fewer Americans believe that global warming is a serious threat. And he and other scientists are concerned about this, particularly in Dr. Tarner's case, because he feels that Al Gore is being disrespected by the American people, a man who's given a great deal of his time and energy to this question. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with your phone calls and more from Dr. Ron Tarner on the issue of global warming on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
It's the Phil Henry Show.
You brought a loaded gun. Was your gun loaded today?
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. On the line with me, Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado. We're discussing global warming. More specifically, we're discussing the Pew Research Center for the People in the Press poll that found that only 57% of Americans believe there is strong scientific evidence that the Earth has gotten warmer over the past few decades, and as a result, people are viewing the problem as less serious. And Dr. Tarner and I have been discussing the reasons for this, and you mentioned the lack of respect for Al Gore's science.
Well, there are a lot of reasons, Phil. Another reason, quite frankly, you mentioned a poll of only 57%. That means that there's 42% of these simpletons who don't believe in global warming. And frankly, they're just the sheep, and the sheep herders are Glenn Hannity and Sean Beck. Those two have been sitting out in the pasture with the sheep and mocking the rest of us who have steers to get to market.
What is the analogy again?
I said that the people that don't believe that there's global warming are sheep, and the sheep herders are Glenn. What did I call him?
Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity?
Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity. And the rest of us who are trying to get the people to understand that global warming is serious, we are beef ranchers. We have cows. That's the analogy from the Old West.
And there's a lot of confusion. Yeah, okay. All right.
What do you mean, yeah, okay?
All right, I understand that sheep herders and cattle ranchers didn't get along. Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that one was right or the other was wrong, you know?
Well, who won? Are you eating a lot of lamb these days? I don't think so.
No, I'm not. All right, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Tarner on the line. Let's go over to Quentin. Quentin, what can we do for you tonight? You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Ron Tarner.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hendry.
Yes, sir.
I have a couple questions for the scientists.
Right, yes, this is Dr. Tarner, and how are you this evening? What is your name?
Quentin, sir.
Yes, Quentin, how are you this evening?
Not too bad. How are you doing yourself?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay.
How is the weather where you are?
Indianapolis.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very sorry to hear that. Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that.
It is too bad. I do want to start out just saying that I've always been mostly conservative, but I did watch a couple years ago An Inconvenient Truth, and I was taken away by the movie, or documentary, whatever you want to call it, and it did intrigue me in many ways. The question
there
I
you
got
go.
To you...
And that's my point. If you see what Al has been able to do,
Look at the
science of what Al's been doing. Only these dullards, though, Quentin, who they wouldn't believe the clear scientific evidence supported global warming. I like to see if you shoved it into their pants, you know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'll start by saying I didn't just stop my research after watching the movie. You know, I took it a lot deeper than that. But I got a couple.
Why is that?
What do you mean? Why is that?
Well, he saw what Al had done. I don't understand. He saw the movie, right?
Right. Do you believe everything you see in the movies?
I don't. It's not like I'm going to the movies to see Raiders of the Lost Ark. I went. I saw It Could Be a Truth with Al Gore, or you know, starring Al Gore, however you want to say it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Inconvenient Truth, starring Al Gore. All right. So what do you have to say here, Quentin?
Quentin, after the movie, no further research is needed. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, let's hear what were you going to say, Quentin?
Just a couple questions. First, can you tell me what Al Gore has done within his personal life that has contributing to not polluting the environment?
Well, that question is one that is a little disrespectful, and I'm not saying you're disrespectful. That's a disrespectful question to Al. He obviously is doing everything he can, and the question is,
that's a fair question. What is the vice president doing?
He's doing what he said you should do. He's got the He's living greed. He rides a bike instead of driving a car. He's lessened his carbon footprint.
So he doesn't take a jet to get from here to China?
No, he doesn't take a... He went to get from here to where? To China. You can't take...
He flies coach on a commercial airline.
Well, of course he flies a jet. Of course he flies a jet. But you can't get from here to China without flying a jet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know. Okay.
Quentin, I got to get going. I thank you for your call, though. That gentleman had some good questions.
If that man was a little slow. I know that he agrees with Al, but he's...
I don't think he does agree with Al. I think he's saying that Al is not exactly walking the walk.
Maybe walking the walk. What's that supposed to mean?
In other words, he's flying jets.
How do you get from here to China? Al's one jet, as opposed to all the other fools that think Al is a liar, flying their jets everywhere. Al flies one jet to China, and I don't know how else you get to China otherwise fly a jet, unless you want to stow away on a merchant ship like your Jack London or something. What a ridiculous question. I don't understand that.
Well, if the guy is saying that the carbon footprint is what it's all about, and he's flying a private jet, is he flying in a commercial jet?
He's flying in a private jet because he's a former vice president of the United States. And one of these dullards that doesn't understand global warming and is a member of the sheep family that Glenn Hannity is a sheep herder of, may try to take a shot at him. Who are we to question Al Gore and his habits? He's way above this conversation. Let's not sully his good day with accusations, okay? Okay, Mr. Henry?
You know, we got a lot more to talk about. I got to come back from a break.
But do you agree with me?
No, I don't agree with you. No, and I'm not going to not sully his name. I'm not going to have a lot of wild accusations, but we're going to keep talking about him. All right, we have Dr. Ron Turner on the question of why Americans don't believe in global warming as much as they used to. Coming back, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, and you can go to philhendryshow.com and see a video of the show right now. We are streaming video as well as audio, and tomorrow, if you can't get to actually watching the show, you can see us online at philhendryshow.com on demand. You can also download the audio from our show tonight at philhendryshow.com. Dr. Ron Turner joins us tonight from Mountain Meadow Observatory, one of a number of scientists who's been very heavily involved and invested in the global warming debate. And what we've been talking about is a Pew Research Center poll that says that only 57% of all Americans actually believe that global warming is a serious threat. That is down 20% after all of the education and all of the talk and all of the... Just all of the discourse that's gone on, down 20% from 3 years ago. And you, Dr. Turner, believe it's the result of a lot of basic disrespect of Al Gore and people who think they're smarter than they are, I guess.
Well, I'm not saying people think they're smarter than they are. I'm saying that I'm a scientist. Al has done his homework on this. And so when you've got me and you've got Al or you've got some of the other scientists who work on this, I don't get it. I don't know why people think they know better than I do when I am telling people that what's happening to the world right now is not unlike what America did to defoliate forests in the Vietnam War.
Those Vietnam-era images are, I think, highly inappropriate. Let me get over to James in Boston. James, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Not inappropriate.
Mr. Hendry, Dr. Turner.
Good evening, sir. Nice to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. The question I have for Dr. Turner is, if Al Gore is so smart, why won't he debate anybody?
Well, he did debate. We had a mock debate in March of last year. We had some of the most eminent scientists in the country attending it. Al debated me in a mock debate, and I took the very ludicrous position that global warming didn't exist. And I can tell you, I'm very happy to report to you, James, that he mopped the floor with me.
Okay,
I mean, he wiped the floor with me.
Correct, but you're also a believer. So you would ask questions that would be good questions. Why won't he debate somebody that is not a believer in global warming?
No. You don't understand. I took the position that I took the opposite position. He destroyed me.
I understand that, but you're also a believer thereof it, and you've stated that. What I'm stating is, why wouldn't he debate somebody that does not agree with global warming?
I didn't agree with him. Does he understand what I'm talking about? Do you understand what I mean by mock debate?
The gentleman understands. What he's saying is that you are in real life.
Forget about real life for a minute, all right? I'm talking about a mock debate in front of a great many eminent scientists.
Mock debate is a mock debate.
What are you saying? I didn't. Oh, okay. So I sat there and let him wipe the floor, wipe his rear end with me, is what you're saying, and I didn't do that.
I didn't use the phrase "wipe his rear end" with you. I'm saying, did you?
You saying I didn't try? Is that what this gentleman's saying?
No. What I'm saying is you're partisan towards it. You're in agreement with Al Gore. Why won't he debate somebody that does not agree with his views? And you're saying he's so smart that he should be able to handle that. You're saying that
yes, but there's no point. There would be no point in it. After he, if you'll pardon the expression, but I think we're all men here, after he handed me my ass on this, I realized what was the point of putting someone through it.
Then, since we will disagree on that one.
I don't know what you disagree with.
Most of
our globe
has been rebuffed, his hockey stick. And you say you study computer models. Computer models are only as good as the information that you enter.
What do you mean his hockey stick? What is that? His name is Al Gore, not Al Globe.
He said Al Gore.
I thought I heard him say Al Globe.
Nope.
And I don't know who that is. But Al Gore, the computer model is very consistent. The model that I looked at, and this was also a model that we used at NASA in Hueytown, shows a decided increase in the sea level over the last, what we do is take a quadrant section of the decade, or if you will, a 10-year period, we'll take a slab section, a quadrant or slab section. The slab, we showed the water level of the ocean going up significantly.
What is significant?
I don't have that. What do you think? I walk around with this stuff? I think you guys are asking trick questions.
It's not a trick question. How many inches did the ocean go up?
It is a trick. I don't walk around with a filing cabinet strapped to my back.
Okay.
I don't know.
My parents live on the Cape.
All right.
My grandfather
lives
down there in the 50s. And my dad's been going down there since the 50s. The water level hasn't gone up down there.
Has your father been taking measurements and accurate measurements? No, I don't think he has. And with all due respect to you, I don't see how. First of all, I don't see how a man that, what is he, fish for lobster? What does that have to do with? I'm a scientist.
All right,
they live on the Cape, and you can't give me any numbers that the ocean levels have gone up.
Well, I'm having a hard time here. This is how your phone sounds. You go, but talk about that, and you. I can't understand what you're saying.
The gentleman's phone is breaking up a little bit, but basically his question and his point is very well made. James, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. And that is, what are the numbers? Give us the numbers.
Give you what numbers? Al had it in the movie.
What do you mean Al had it in the movie? Al had in his movie.
And so one more thing. I don't mean to be rude, but I've met him, and I've stayed at his home. Okay, I've slept in a bedroom in his home. And I don't think you have, so I call him Al. You might want to call him Vice President Gore, or however you say it. But I've slept in a bed at his house that his wife, she turned it down and left pajamas for me. So I think that I have an intimate knowledge of the family that you don't have. And when I say that Al had it in his movie, I would suggest that you reference that. Now, you asked me how many inches has the water gone up over in that slab section. You talk about a slab.
I don't know what you mean by slab.
A slab section of the quadrant. That is a slab section of the 10-year period. Probably, I believe it's gone up figuring inches.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that?
It's gone up about the inches.
I didn't understand. 4 inches?
No, I didn't say 4. I said inches.
Oh, your phone broke up.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of in a dead zone.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show. Here is Rodney in Syracuse. Rodney, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Dr. Ron Tarner. Thanks for calling, sir.
You're welcome. Yeah, I got a question. All right, you know, the scientists there, all right, just because he says it does, you know, global warming, well, there's a lot of other scientists that say that it ain't. So, you know.
Well, yeah, but they're all discredited. Their hacks have been fully...
See,
they're working for the, you know, they're working for the oil company. They're working for the oil company.
See, that's
what oil
guys
companies
do. No, that's what you guys do. Every
that's what they're doing. They work for the oil company.
Will you let me talk?
I'm letting you talk. I just want you to know they work for the oil company.
Yeah, and everybody works for the coal, and they do all this and everything else. According to what you guys do, every time someone debates you or says something, they're idiots, they're sheep. They don't know nothing, but yet you guys know everything. It just because you slept at Al Gore's house don't make you Mr. Smart. It's like you didn't stay at
Al Gore's. No, it doesn't. I'm just saying to Mr. Henry that I stayed at his house, and Mr. Henry should call him Vice President Gore. I call him Al. But
so
those are to the point. Those other scientists...
If I'm talking about somebody that in a third party, I can call him anything I want. Now, if I address him personally, yes, I'll call him Vice President Gore. But if I'm talking to him from somebody else, I'll call him Al, I'll call him Bar, or whatever I want to. That's not being
I'm saying that, all right, that you don't respect the science. If you call him Al, then you think he's, you know, obviously I have enough respect for him and what he's doing with the carbon footprint. Now, those other scientists are Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity fans. You didn't know that, did you? Do you trust them?
I watch their shows and I watch other shows.
No. I'm saying the scientists that you're talking about are Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity fans.
Goddamn.
How do you know that that's the case?
It's very obvious to me.
They're not scientists. They're taco shows.
I didn't say that Sean Hannity is a scientist. I said the fans of Sean Hannity are the scientists.
Wait a minute. Are you saying, in other words, that the scientists who do not believe in global warming are Sean Hannity fans?
Yes. God almighty, how many different ways you want me to say it?
Well, how do you know that that's a fact?
I happen to watch Keith Olbermann. That doesn't affect me.
Oh,
I watch Keith
Olbermann. Olbermann is a good one to watch. He calls everybody a name, he reflects them, and then you get on his worst list if you don't agree with him.
Keith Olbermann makes a pretty good point about different stuff, but I don't have to watch Keith Olbermann to know what to think about global warming. But the scientists that are opposed to it, they watch Glenn Beck to find out what to think.
That's a ridiculous statement to make. And I would tell you something else. I bet you those scientists would censor you at your next professional meeting for even saying something like that.
They can't censor me. They're ants. I'm a volcano, and they're ants. They can't censor Dr. Rod Tarter.
And your mock thing that you had, big deal. So what? You debated each other. You both know what you're going to say. You know what your own thinks. But you don't have people who have a different point of view to debate against it. It's like the other day on news, some guy was talking to him, and he cut his mic. Okay, that's real fair debating.
Wait, you're talking about Sean Hannity? Yeah, he would do that.
It was not Sean Hannity. It was Al Gore's guys. Cut the guy's mic.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that.
And,
that's right. I saw
he asked Gore, so how about the polar bears? And Gore asked him, well, aren't the polar bears in danger? And the guy says, well, they have doubled their population. You think about it. And then that guy questioned again. They cut the guy's mic. Now, that's a debate.
What are you talking about?
I saw that, too. And Gore wouldn't let the guy ask him any more questions.
Al doesn't have time for stupid questions when it's obvious.
It's only
that
stupid
it's get,
if you think
are
it's
you
stupid. Stupid to you may be smart to somebody else.
You don't think it's getting hotter.
Is that your scientific evidence? Is that what you want us to believe?
I'm just asking you guys straight out. You don't think it's getting hotter?
No, I don't think it's getting hotter. I think it's getting colder.
It's been very cold here in New York State.
Come on.
This is something like the fourth coldest summer since 1927 in New York State. Are you going to tell me it's getting warm?
Okay, well, I'm so happy you have a subscription to the Farmer's Almanac. Come on, Grandpa. What we're trying to say here...
Like, why don't you have some respect, yes, man? You have anybody that respect Al Gore talking about the Farmer's Almanac.
Look at that. That guy was a troublemaker. He was a bull.
I'm 62 years old, and I've lived with you summers, and I've been through...
You lived with who?
Lived in a lot of places in the United States, and I've seen it warm, and I've seen it cold, and I haven't seen that much difference in it.
I slept at Al Gore's house, and they were making breakfast the next day. I just want you to know, I was having breakfast the next morning with Al and with Tipsy Tipper, and she said to me, "Thank God that you believe Al." And I said, "I wouldn't have it any other way." Now, that guy that was asking questions of Al Gore, and you mentioned him, he was a mole from Newsbusters. So that's
he was a filmmaker from Ireland.
What's the difference?
Well, there's a big difference. He's a filmmaker from Ireland and a mole from Newsbusters.
That guy was a bull for the National Review.
He was asking Al Gore about what the England court said, that they could not show his movie in England because it has seven major problems onto it.
Well, you know, I'll say...
The gentleman on the phone, you know what? I've got something I want to play for you. You remind me of this guy right here.
Blah, 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 blah.
There you go.
Well, that was real adult of you.
That's the way you guys do it. If you can't defend somebody,
are you kidding me?
You make fun of them. Make fun of them. All right, listen. Thank you very, very much for calling tonight, Rodney. I got to get going, brother. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll take one more phone call here. We do have to get to the stories we couldn't get to. And this is Shane in Nashville. Shane, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. What can we do for you, sir?
Hey, I was just... I don't know if you hung up on the other guy or not.
We did hang up on him.
I'm sorry?
I was just talking to my guest.
Oh, okay.
He's talking to me.
I was home, and I heard the conversation on the radio and couldn't wait to get to the phone and give you a call. I just came back from Nunavut, Canada, which is above the Arctic Circle this past March. I was up there hunting. I was hunting muskox, and I met some great people up there in Rankin Inlet, Nunavut, Canada. And as soon as I signed in to the first place I stayed for the night, the bed and breakfast, and I put down Tennessee, I thought I was going to have a fight on my hands. Oh, you're from Al Gore country. Oh, my God, we can't handle this. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And they said, oh, Jesus, Al has grabbed a damn polar bear, and he's hugged on to him and made him the poster child for global warming. And we have such a problem up here with the polar bears right now. It's just unbelievable. Why doesn't he bring his family and grandkids and children and everyone up here for a great outdoor adventure and let him see what the polar bears are about? Well, long story short, the warmest night was minus 45 degrees. The coldest
minus
night
45, was minus, huh? Wow.
Yeah, the coldest night.
Now, Shane, I want to ask you.
39.
Oh my Lord! This was up near the Arctic Circle, huh?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Did this guy say he's up there hunting buskox? What? I've never heard of anyone going from Tennessee to Canada to hunt buskox.
Yeah, there's a couple of us down here that have done that.
Well, let me say something. You sounded awful lot like. I think if you should say this to those people, you know what? You live up here where no one wants to live. So what do you think they're going to say? They live in a barren ice waste. They don't want any part of the human race. They're living under the hole of the ozone layer. So already their brains have been cooked well beyond recommended temperature.
No, I'm not going to agree with that.
Oh, that's ridiculous. No, that's ridiculous.
They're brave of it.
Those people up there know what the earth is all about, and they know what's going on with Mother Nature. They've lived there for thousands of years.
They live on the earth.
These are the native people, right?
The Inuit.
Okay. I thought they were white people. In that case, probably.
Oh, yeah. So, in other words, the white people.
Well, I still think their brains have been cooked because of the ozone layer. And the other thing I say is that you come from Tennessee. That's good country. That's Al Gore country.
And I think you should tell them that. I'm one of the electricians that have worked at his house, and I know what's going on over there.
I slept there.
Ford Expeditions and Explorers and that Mustang.
How about that?
289 engine and everything.
And now he's crying about
global warming, yet he's got big V8 motors on the market right now, and running hot rods with no emissions. So
yeah, that's what she said.
I'm the guy.
Don't make a joke about it, okay?
And I can talk.
I slept at his house, and I had French toast.
Well, so what, man? This gentleman, listen,
I'm telling
good,
you
good
is,
story,
I've been up
Shane. That's a great
circle.
Yeah, that's a great story. Thank you very much. Dr. Turner, I thank you very much.
Who are you going to buy that? I'm hunting buskox. Oh, if that's not a hallucination induced by stiffened paint thinner, I know that those explorers were gifts. You can't turn down a gift, so thanks a lot.
Oh, you don't know that.
Yes, I do.
Dr. Ron Turner, no, he doesn't know anything.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't. 877-876, Phil, back with the stories that we couldn't get to.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Blah, 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 blah.
Phil Hendry.
And it's time for the stories we couldn't get to tonight here on the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show. A pair of Air Jordan sneakers could cost the University of Central Florida millions of dollars. Michael Jordan's son, Marcus Jordan, is a member of the UCF basketball team. The university promised Jordan he could wear his father's Nike brand sneakers this season, but there's a problem. The problem is UCF has an exclusive $3 million contract that says its athletes will only wear Adidas shoes and clothing. The school said Adidas... And they are in the process of negotiating a new agreement. And so like that, so I guess the Air Jordans are out, baby. In Waisu, a rural town in New Zealand, they have been forced to cancel their annual rabbit-throwing competition after complaints from, you guessed it, animal rights groups. Can't have any fun tossing rabbits anymore. In the contest, which is held each year to coincide with the start of the pig hunt, children see how far they can throw a dead rabbit, but the RSPCA said the rabbit throw sent a message to children that dead animals were fun and could legitimately be used as a form of entertainment. Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either. Charles Callwalder, a animal cruelty inspector, said the rabbit throw was also cruel. Do you throw your dead grandmother around for a joke at her funeral? Many of the people there said, yes, we do. And Callwalder walked out with his, quote, tail, end of quote, between his legs. The stupid, stupid Kiwi. All right, I'm kidding. No, he didn't. They all were ashamed and they stopped throwing rabbits. But they are still throwing their grandmothers, dead though they would be.
They really are?
They're not. I don't know if they're throwing their dead grandmothers. Anyway, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rantz, our technical director, or view the show on demand there with our on-demand video as well as our downloadable audio and all of our archives. It's real cool. Till tomorrow morning or tonight and all that, good morning from El Pacifico.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Tonight I want to turn to a personal note, if I may, and address a matter that has raised some curiosity.
The blood. Seeing blood coming from everywhere.
And you have to understand, Father Alexios is very small in stature. He's not a big man.
Stay in your car! Stay in your car! Stay in your car! Stay in your car!
Blah, 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 blah.
Don't condescend to me.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that uses reality as its bitch. On this program, man, you know, you can have an opinion. You can just see what's going on this program. The Alice in Wonderland of talk radio, we take you right through the looking glass of reality. A happy Veterans Day to our veterans, to their families, to their friends, and to all of us who admire and respect and love our veterans as our comrades in this democratic push. As I shouldn't use the word comrade, it sounds commie.
Yeah, it does, man. What?
All right. In any event, that's how I see them. And a happy Veterans Day to all of you. World famous Phil Hendry Show here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. You can access our show online if you are not within screaming distance of one of our affiliates. We've got affiliates all over the country. We're adding them each and every day. But for whatever reason, if you'd like to go online and listen to our live streaming audio, you can do it at philhendryshow.com. And if you're a person who enjoys watching, you know, as well as listening, you can watch. I mean, the show's on video right now, and you can see us in our studio here as we conduct this radio show. It's all there at philhendryshow.com. Among the many stories having to do with our military today, of course, the one that stands out the most is the one having to do with this man who opened fire at Fort Hood, this major, this psychiatrist, who is alive and is being waterboarded. I'm kidding, probably not, but, you know, I wish.
Yeah, we can only hope.
Nonetheless, he is alive, and Hassan apparently is in the news today. He didn't formally ask to leave the military, according to the Army, so that's of some significance. Now, later on in the program, we're also going to be talking about a new game called Call to Duty. Some people are referring to it in the colloquial sense as Call to Duty 4, but its actual name is Call to Duty Modern Warfare 2. It contains extremely, extremely, extremely graphic scenes of terrorist violence. We'll play the audio for you later in the program, and we'll also describe what you're going to be seeing, but essentially it's a group of supposed Russian terrorists opening fire on a security line of people taking their shoes off, waiting to go through security at an airport, and they come in with automatic weapons and begin killing everybody in sight. This is a video game that's out right now, Call to Duty Modern Warfare 2, and we're going to talk about that. Father James McQuarters will join us with a very interesting look at the latest conversation going on in the Vatican having to do with life on other planets. But first on our program this evening, first up is Dr. Jim Sadler, and we're going to be talking with Dr. Sadler this evening about the story of Major Nidal M. Hassan and how this horrific, horrific occurrence, this violence began. The motivations, the, you know, all of these conversations having to do with why he did what he did. We're going to be talking with Dr. Sadler tonight about that, and we have him on the line from San Diego, California. Dr. Sadler, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your program this evening.
Can you tell me about this Hassan, this Nidal M. Hassan, who is a psychiatrist? You yourself, you're a doctor. What could possibly, beyond his religion, beyond the fact that he was a Muslim, what possibly could have motivated this?
I don't know what that might be. I don't think it would be anything of significance, given the fact that he was a psychiatrist and therefore would be motivated, I think, primarily from a healthy perspective. So we have to turn to his religion. We have no other alternative.
All right, then speaking in terms of his religion, this was strictly a man exercising some kind of jihadist view, some sort of some jihadist action that is given in his mind and in the minds of some is given support in the Quran.
I wouldn't look at it from that standpoint, Phil. I think what we do in science is we look for the obvious connections. We know, for instance, that there were these very offensive cartoons that appeared in the media 3 years ago of the Prophet Muhammad. They were so offensive that they caused countless thousands in the Middle East to resort to violence because they had no alternative. And these cartoons were pulled subsequently from major publications in Europe and the United States. That's according to the reports that I've received. However, were all of them pulled from the major publications? Did some of them leak through? Did some of them slip through the cracks? This is a question that I have that I think is very serious. We know that the filmmaker in the Netherlands who was planning on producing a film that was critical of Islam, we know that he was subsequently shot and killed. That doesn't mean that the film did not make it into circulation. These steps however well intended, must be thorough. They must adhere strictly to what is required, and the steps must be taken with haste and as I said, very thoroughly. Were they, or was there just a lip service paid to the sensitivities of the Muslim people? If any of these cartoons made their way into a publication in Fort Hood, then obviously the media in this country dropped the ball, and dropped the ball very seriously.
There are those that would argue freedom of press. There are those that would argue the freedom of speech. So when you talk about the Muhammad cartoons and you talk about the film that I believe this was the Theo van Gogh, who is a descendant of Vincent van Gogh, was planning this film critical of Islam. What of freedom of the press? What of freedom of speech?
What of freedom of the press? What of freedom of speech? These are questions, Mr. Henry, that have been asked and answered. We have freedom of the press. We have freedom of speech. We also have a reality of some billions and billions and billions and millions of Muslims who understand, and that's all well and good about the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press. But they required that we remove these cartoons, and we responded. So yes, there's freedom of press, and there's freedom of speech, and there's freedom of the press. But there's also the requirements of those who have made their case very forcefully that. You can. There's an old saying, Phil, and I hope I don't offend you. There's an old saying that we used to use in the Navy, and it goes like this: "Don't pee down my back and tell me it's raining." So when you talk about freedom of press, the average Muslim is going to say to you something along those lines: "Don't pee down my back and tell me it's raining."
Well, I don't understand that. We, in our country, we have the freedom of speech and press to the extent where we can satirize Muhammad.
Well, do what you want. Do whatever you want. But issue was given, notice was given, and I think due notice was given, and I think that there was enough lead time whereby they could get these cartoons out of these newspapers and get these movies out of the movie theaters. They served notice and gave us enough lead time whereby they could have been withdrawn. I don't know if that was done as judiciously and professionally as it should have been. And if one leaked through, like I said, and made its way into a newspaper that fell into the hands of Major Hassan, somebody somewhere dropped the ball. And I think at this point, not only do we want to know the names of who the prosecuting attorneys are going to be and who the witnesses are, but who let the Muhammad cartoon into the newspaper that Major Hassan saw.
Well, we don't know that he saw a Muhammad cartoon.
No, we don't. But I'm saying, if this was provoked by the Muhammad cartoon not being completely edited out, and the gentleman you said his name was what? Van Gogh?
Theo van Gogh was a filmmaker.
Right, Theo van Gogh.
You know, he was a filmmaker in the Netherlands. He's a descendant of Vincent van Gogh, one of the world's great artists. And he was going to make a film that was critical of Islam and was murdered on the streets of Amsterdam when this film's, I guess this film's production was made public. Do you have any comment on that, sir?
I think I did comment. I said that that doesn't necessarily mean the film is not in distribution.
No, but do you have any comment on the fact that a filmmaker, a man engaged in a form of expression, was killed because of the movie he was making?
I think there was lead. If there hadn't been any lead time, in other words, if there hadn't been full notice given, it would have been...
Well, what do you mean by lead time? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I'm trying to finish my point, Phil, if I could.
But when you say lead time,
I believe there was sufficient lead time, and freedom of speech and press is great in theory, but in the real world, we have to consider the feelings of everyone. I can tell you that I am a part of my avocation is I'm a weightlifter. I do an awful lot of bodybuilding. As a result, I'm in my 50s, but I'm built as if I'm, you know, a much younger man. As a result, I have a younger wife. And I'm not saying any of that to self-aggrandize. What I'm saying is that that puts me at odds with a great many people in the world who think that I'm walking around as if I know how to beat people up because I've got a physique that looks like that. But I don't. I don't. But I take responsibility for that. So if I'm, as they say in the bodybuilding world, ripped, and I have a big chest, which I do, and big arms, I have to be sensitive to the fact that somebody might be afraid I'm going to beat them up. And that's not my intention. And so we have to be sensitive to the feelings of Muslims, especially when they give us full lead time and let us know that these cartoons are offensive, these movies are offensive, notice has been served, there's a good 3-month window where we can pull all of this out of the media before they... I can't take it anymore. And I think that's really what the Muslim world is telling us. They're telling us, get those cartoons out of the newspapers and get them out of the movie theaters before we can't take it anymore.
But we still don't know that Major Hassan saw any Muhammad cartoon that might have offended him, saw any anti-Islamic so-called film that might have offended him, or saw anything in the media that might have offended him and caused him to go on this shooting spree, if such a thing can actually cause you to go on a shooting spree.
But did you're not listening.
Sir, I'm listening to you.
No, but you heard. The Muslim world gave us full notice. They said, these things offend us, and they need to be out of the newspapers before we can't take it anymore. Now, what does that mean to you?
Well, all right. You know, what they're, to me, it means that they're using an excuse for violence as opposed to saying that that's the cause of the violence.
And I'm saying that's very convenient for you to say. When they give you full notice and lead time, and they have set a date, for instance, okay, in 60 days we won't be able to stand this any longer, and there will be some violent action taken. I don't think you can say that they didn't give you lead time.
But I don't know that that was so. All right, Dr. Jim Sadler is with us. We do have to take a break. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Jim Sadler talking to us about Major Nedal M. Hassan. Did he see one of the Muhammad cartoons? Did he see a film that was offensive to Muslims? Much of these portrayals in the media, these depictions and so forth, have been the subject of a great deal of controversy. And there are some, not all, but some Muslims who've even said they are insightful. Is it possible that this man's violence was the result of an insightful image in the media against Islam, for instance, the Muhammad cartoon? We are a country that practices free speech and freedom of the press, and so when he says they gave us lead time, it doesn't necessarily mean we don't publish cartoons. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Dr. Jim Sadler on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Can I get a little cup of water? Just a little cup of water.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with Dr. Jim Sadler about Major Nedal M. Hassan. One comment or question, Doctor, before we get to some phone calls, 877-876-PHIL. You mentioned during the break that the Chris Matthews report.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me. Chris Matthews made a very good point on Fox News when he asked the question, is it illegal to contact Al-Qaeda? Is it illegal to call up Al-Qaeda? No, it is not. and I can't believe we're having this conversation.
Well, it's not illegal to call up Al-Qaeda, but it would make you the subject of police suspicion, wouldn't it?
it illegal to, I don't know what you mean by police suspicion.
Al-Qaeda is an organization of terrorists that the FBI is looking at, and certainly their leadership is wanted actively, so wouldn't that make you the target of police suspicion?
All I'm saying is that these things are provocative. I place a phone call to Al-Qaeda for reasons that maybe have nothing to do with blowing up blowing up an airplane, then what is the police doing provoking me by telling me that they're going to listen in? That's my point.
877, all right, 877-876-PHIL is the number. We'll go to a phone call here. Robert, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Dr. Sadler, you're completely off. Just because a group of people are mad over a movie or a thought doesn't make it right to sit there and cut up a guy in the middle of the street. I mean, that's ridiculous. Every time I see a Muslim woman in this country wearing that thing on her head that just seems like a repressive type deal to me, I want to rip it off. I think it's ridiculous, but I don't do it out of respect.
I didn't say it was right.
Behavior.
I didn't say it was right. I said it provokes the Muslims. Look, they gave us lead time on this.
So what? Big deal. So what? Lead time. So basically, if I threaten you in any kind of way and tell you that, look, Dr. Satter, you got to change your opinions in 30 days, or I'm going to fly up to wherever it is you are and smack you on the head, that's you're going to say, I got lead time.
Well, I don't know what you're referring to. I'm saying that the Muslim cartoons and some of these movies, when they said to us, you are provoking us to the point where we can't take it anymore, and we need you, we're going to give you, I don't know if they gave us 30 days or 60 days. I didn't read the reports.
What did they give us a time? What do you mean they? Who gave us a time?
I'm simply saying they gave us fair warning.
Fair warning for what? Change our opinions or else?
No, to remove these Muhammad cartoons and these cartoons of Muhammad water skiing and all of this nonsense.
What you're saying is like the equivalent of us, of the U.S. government saying, Al Jazeera, you've got to stop reporting certain stories or we're just going to bomb your headquarters in Qatar. We're giving you lead time, man, so, you know, it's cool. We're just going to bomb you and, get over it.
That doesn't make any sense.
America's not a religion. Their lead time, because we can't put their cartoons in our newspapers, is completely just, that's completely acceptable.
Well, let me ask you something. I'll put it to you another way, sir. At what point would you say that somebody's just begging for it when you give them lead time and you say, after this point, we ain't going to be able to stand it any longer.
Say that again?
What I'm saying to the gentleman on the phone, at what point are you asking for it? And I'm wondering if we're just begging for it with these Muhammad cartoons.
You said that you even said yourself that the Muhammad cartoons were voluntarily removed from major American publications.
I don't know that for sure.
Well, I know the New York Times, every major news outlet in America refused to publish them for the very reasons that you're giving. Now, what are you saying? You're saying one of them leaked through?
One of them might have leaked through, in which case we've got a lot to answer for. Because they gave us lead time, which this gentleman's laughing about, and we still let one get through? I don't understand that.
I do. We print whatever we feel like in this country, and we don't have to put up with it. What anybody else...
We're not begging for it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler.
Phil Henry.
I mean, we're asking for it.
That's very interesting. Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. All right, Dr. Jim Sadler joins us, and you asked a very good question during the break. You said, did I not have the Muhammad cartoon on my website?
Yes, and And you did at one point have those Bahama cartoons on your website, did you not?
I did.
But you took those cartoons down. Why?
I was directed to take those cartoons down by the company I worked for.
And so one could say that not only did you take the cartoons down, but you took something else down, you know.
No, I don't know.
Well, to use a very crude terminology, you took your shorts down for the corporate interest.
No. We're talking about, I did because I was told to do something. I had no choice, okay? I'm just asking you, do we take all of these cartoons down, all of these movies down?
We have to be sensitive to the feelings of the Muslims. And if it means we have to push aside, I'm not saying that we get rid of free speech, but if we could tone it down. Otherwise, it's like we're standing there begging for it. And I think with the lead time that I mentioned...
You're talking about lead time and begging for it, Dr. Sadler, and all of these things. These are terms used, I think, by people who act out of fear. Here is Denise on the Phil Hendry Show. Denise, you're on with Dr. Jim Sadler as we talk here about Colonel Hassan. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask your guest a question first. Is your guest an American citizen?
Dr. Sadler?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, ma'am?
Sure. Are you an American citizen?
Yes, I am. I don't know what that has to do with it. Yes, it is most certainly a yes.
Okay. And are you aware of what
that has to do? What that has to do with it?
Are you aware of what your country, the United States of America, was founded on?
Well, we were founded on a number of things.
That's correct.
First of all, we were founded on the rights of the colonies to...
Simple yes or no.
You know,
good.
Turkey, to Turkey farm.
To make
well,
sure
what you...
that you're aware.
We were founded on the Calvinist religious teachings of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Is that what you're speaking of?
The lady is obviously referring to the American Charter, the Constitution.
Oh, well, she didn't say that. Now, there are a number of things that we're founded on, Mr. Hendry. We are founded on religious tolerance. We're founded on the rights of states. We're founded on federalism. We are founded on... I could go on and on. So I don't know what specifically
she's talking
about.
Because we all know what we're founded on. And I guess my question to you
is, do you disagree on the idea of 13 colonies? That was something we were founded on.
Okay, repeat your question, ma'am, because he was talking.
Do you agree...
Oh, I don't get to talk?
...freedom of press?
I agree with freedom of press, except you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater. So,
I'm not sure I
understand
your analogies.
Do you understand what you can't publish anything...
Well, you're talking about speech, Doctor.
It doesn't matter. You can't publish anything that's injurious to the public welfare. I can't go on and publish in a newspaper that the theater's on fire. Everybody get out.
Wait a minute. How do you publish that in a newspaper?
Well, but you know what I'm saying. I can't yell it. I can't yell it. You're not allowed to yell in a newspaper or anywhere that the theater's on fire because you would cause a stampede, and that would be against public safety. And so, no, there are limits to speech. Now, in a paper that I wrote last year for the University of San Diego, I articulated very clearly these points, and yet I'm still having to answer the same tired questions, and I'm just wondering when it ends. And this, again, goes to the point of how much am I supposed to take? You see what I'm saying? Go ahead.
I am very offended by the comments you have made, Doctor, that I feel are in direct opposition to what the country is founded on. However, I do
understand you have the right to have these
opinions. I will also tell you that I believe what happened at Fort Hood was an act of treason. I also believe that no matter what you have to say, there is no justification for what happened. And if you do something I don't like, and I go out and shoot you, that's a crime. Okay?
There's no question that the law has been transgressed in some way. But I am wondering who broke the law? Was it the major or was it the United States for letting the Muhammad cartoons? You see what I mean when I say how much are they supposed to take before they can't take it anymore?
What does that mean? How much are they supposed to take?
Oh my God! Where did you get this?
Well, Mr. Henry, you're talking over the lady. She was asking me a question.
I'll ask a question. I'll let Denise. How much more are they supposed to take? What does that mean?
When they gave us lead time and said, look, these cartoons offend our religion, so get them out of the newspapers and let's get it going. And we did. We might not have gotten them out of all the newspapers. That's all I'm saying.
And if we did, so what? That does not give anyone...
We may not have, which means that Major Nassan, or Major, I don't know his name, Hassan, he might have... Look, freedom of press is fine and good, but what's more important is tolerance. Tolerance of the different religions and everything that they say. You know?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You talk
in circles. You know what I'm saying? Ma'am?
You talk in circles, ma'am?
She's there, and listen to what she's saying. You're talking in circles.
I'm talking in circles.
You're talking in circles. I believe that you
I'm have a global
decided
citizen.
That we, you know, you're probably the same kind of person who says,
I go global.
She's wearing a short skirt, she asked to get raped, okay? The fault is
would
not
you send your would you send your daughter out in a teeny, in a little tiny skirt that showed everything? No, you wouldn't. Why? She may have the right, but you as a mother recognize that she can't go out looking like that. You can't walk into restaurants looking like that and expect to get a good seat or to have anyone respect your right to order or anything else.
You know, it's funny. I don't look at big men and think that they are going to beat me. You seem to have...
Well, maybe you should start. I don't know.
Ideas.
What do you mean she should start?
I don't know what... She's bringing her sexual taste into this, and I'm not interested in that at all. I'm interested in...
She's not bringing her sexual taste into anything.
Then what does she mean by getting beaten?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Is the female caller there? Is the female caller there?
The female caller is here.
Yes. What did you mean by getting beaten by a big guy? Is that...
Well, you mentioned earlier...
Sexual...
You mentioned earlier in your conversation that based on your build, you make the assumption that people will fear you.
Yes, they often do. But I wouldn't beat a woman up. If you saw me, the likelihood is you'd be attracted to me. Okay, because of my build.
Until you opened your mouth.
Well, okay.
I'm sorry. I need to.
But I just like they can't. You might not be able to take it anymore.
All right, look.
You do
I
not
appreciate it very much.
Intelligence.
Yes.
And,
Denise, thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Will, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
But the record show, you hung up on her.
No, I did not.
Well, she was still talking, Mr. Henry.
Will, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
I'm going to quote Austin there. I'm going to quote Ace Ventura to start off. Fiction can be fun, but I prefer the reference section. First off, Major Hassan Nadal.
I didn't hear what the man said.
What did you say, Will? You said fiction can be fun, but you prefer... Okay.
I prefer the reference section. First off, I'm a veteran. And
isn't that nice?
First off, I'm a veteran. We'll say happy Veterans Day to all the veterans still out there listening. The man was a major in the U.S. Army. Regardless of what might have incited him, what he may have read... To get to the rank of major in the U.S. Army, you have to be somewhat squared away and understand right from wrong. And to say that anything...
Well, who promoted him? Who promoted him to major? Somebody promoted him to major, and that's somebody else I'd like to talk to. See? So
I'll agree with you there, but...
Well, there you go.
The fact of the matter...
See? So you do see where I'm making sense.
Let this man make his statement, please.
What I'm getting at is
that... With all due respect, I'm a doctor.
Okay. Doctor?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying you're a veteran, but I'm a doctor. I think there's a little bit more credibility coming from me.
All right. Go ahead, Will, and make your statement, sir.
the fact of the matter is, I mean, I don't care if page one had a very derogatory cartoon of Muhammad. There's nothing and no way that justifies by any smidgen him, you know, the train of thought that this justified the man going in there and doing that. And the fact that
it might have lent to it. That's all.
No way. I mean, that's saying on the same token that because as a Christian American, I'm offended by what these Muslims have done. So it's okay if I go out and blow up a mosque. And then
well,
do
let
you
me
think
ask
the
you this.
No. Let me finish.
Well, it's not the same thing. That's not the same thing.
Okay, doctor, go ahead. Go ahead, Walker.
You're talking all over this man who is trying to call in. He is a veteran. It is Veterans Day.
Well, he might be saying he's a veteran so he can get everybody to let him
whatever,
talk.
Dude. Whatever,
all right.
Dude.
Well, I mean, you say, well, okay, dude.
Go ahead, doctor. Go ahead, doctor. I'll let you
know. No, go ahead, dude. No, dude, you go ahead, dude.
Thank you.
All right, I'll talk. First of all, what you said, Dr. Sadler.
No, I don't want to hear you talk. I'd rather hear him talk than hear you talk. Because he's a veteran, you're a doctor. I mean, I'm a doctor, he's a veteran, you're a talk show host. And of all the people on this earth that have the least amount of credibility, it's you guys. Would you agree with that, Mr. Hendry?
You know what? I would, yes. But the fact of the matter is that this man is saying, if you say to someone, you should stop doing that, or I'm going to act violently, that doesn't put the onus on that person to stop doing that thing. It puts the onus on the rest of us to arm ourselves and get ready for a hostile and weird person.
If I'm in my backyard, and this gentleman, Will, is in his backyard, watering his lawn and doing something that's irritating me, and I say to him, you got to stop, I'm giving you lead time, there's a point where I won't be able to take it no more. What do you think is the intelligent thing for him to do?
Well, I mean, I hope you wouldn't jump over my fence and shoot me.
No,
I mean,
I'm not going to shoot
proper,
you.
The proper thing is somebody
all right.
Educated as a major.
Don't even answer the question. It's a stupid question. It's a ridiculous question. Thank you, Will, for your call. I'm going to take a break. 877-876-PHIL. As we're talking here with Dr. Jim Sadler about the... You know something, man, I don't care what provokes who or how or when. We've gotten to a point in this society now where we got to stop and make sure that there isn't anything provocative, because the provocative things, that's the reason why we have violence. You see, if there were guns and there's no guns, then there's no violence. If we have TV shows, no violence. This, no violence. That, no violence. And if we don't say the wrong word, then we won't have to suffer violence from the Muslims. If we don't say the wrong word, we won't have to have the Christians jumping down our throats. And if we don't say the wrong word, then we won't have the Republicans on us. Don't say the wrong word, then the Democrats won't be on us. And let's just all shut up and stay in our house and don't say the wrong thing, and we're all going to be safe.
What about the guest?
What do you mean, what about the guest?
Well, you're talking. I'd rather hear from him.
Will you shut up and let me get into the break? 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Dr. Jim Sadler. And why this major opened fire on these folks? Did he happen to see one of the Muhammad cartoons? Did something slip through the cracks? Did he see an anti-Muslim movie? We must know. And somebody's got to get called on the carpet for it. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And back with more of your phone calls for Dr. Jim Sadler, 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Sadler, you mentioned to me during our break that you are on my side. Tell me what that means.
Well, I think it's clear that you've misrepresented. I think you've misunderstood me. I am not here as a sort of advocate for Muslims. I'm on your side. I'm on the side of your callers. What I'm trying to do is give you practical guidelines on how to deal with a group of people who have shown themselves to be hypersensitive to a great deal of stimulus and alleged provocation. If you know what's going to happen if you publish some Muhammad cartoon, or a woman doesn't wear a burqa, or she doesn't have the scarf on her head. A lot of these Muslims, they'll go wild all over you. And you have got to understand what you're dealing with. I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to tell you that you're dealing with a powder keg. and you got to do something. It's almost like throwing red meat to a vicious animal.
And well, now you're going in the opposite direction and offending Muslims.
Well, that's the world we live in, isn't it? I can't say boo without somebody getting their feelings hurt. I'm trying to tell you, if you keep it up with the things that you say about Muslims in this society, they're going to go wild all over you. And that is a very regrettable...
Caller, we have on the line here Frank. Frank, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead, sir.
Dr. Sadler, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What provocated 9/11? You're saying the man probably saw Muslim cartoons offending Muhammad, and he went off and took out a bunch of people. You know,
yeah,
we don't always
no
publicize everything. The society is word of mouth. You're saying it's publicism. There's people that talk bad about him everywhere you go, and I don't see people getting killed everywhere I go.
Well, that's true, but you've got a certain type of Muslim. They'll go off on you at the drop of a hat. You know that. And
well,
so
a Muslim is a Muslim.
Let me ask you.
They
something.
All believe the same thing.
Do you light up a cigarette when you're standing in a fireworks bin? No.
I do.
I don't think you do. You light up cigarettes when you. Well, then you deserve to get burned, don't you?
This country has given me plenty of freedom, and I'm going to take advantage of every single one of them.
All right, and if you get cooked alive by the fireworks, then it's your fault.
That was my choice.
Well, this is my point exactly.
They will.
If you stand there and you say, you know, this guy's wearing a beanie on his head, or he's a raghead, or some deal like that, the next thing you know, they'll go wild all over you. And that's what I'm trying to prevent.
Oh, I don't buy that. I don't buy that.
What do you mean you don't buy it?
It sounds to me that I don't buy that at all. You know, at what point do you stop being afraid of the bully and you go ahead and walk down the street, even if the bully is standing on the corner, and you engage that person?
So you want to take the chance of getting your ass beat. Why?
Because that street belongs to me, too. Not just that bully. And we have to take these people on sometimes. We have to say to them, this is how life is. If you don't like it, you can move. If you do, then you stay here and you live the way we want you to live.
All right. And so
a long time ago, it was said, America, love it or leave it. You know, there's a lot of things that go on in this country.
What does that mean? I don't understand that. America, love it or leave it. What does that mean?
It means if you love it, love it. If you leave it,
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
If you're not happy with what's going on here, then go join your Muslim brothers across the sea and pray with them.
All right, well, okay, so, and Frank, let me ask you, on the 4th of July, where are you going to be? Because I got to watch this. This is going to be great.
Watch what?
This guy just said he'll light a cigarette around a bunch of fireworks. I can't wait to see that.
How do you think I light my fireworks? I light a cigarette, I take the cigarette, I light my fireworks.
Right, and then you light up. So the fireworks go up, and then Frank goes up.
Do you think I'm going to stick around long enough to get burned?
Well, that's what you just said. You light the fireworks, and... Oh, forget it. All I know is I'm going to bring my video camera, and that's going up on jimsadler.com, Frank, cooking, while the kids are enjoying their sparklers.
You're welcome to San Antonio, Texas.
All right, well... Can't wait to see you. Frank, thanks so much for your call, and Dr. Sadler, thank you for joining us on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show this evening. Talking about this major, you know, and at some point I think we have to look at this and call it what it is. It's terrorism, but it's also a mentally unstable individual engaged in violence. And so what is terrorism? Mentally unstable people engaged in a kind of violence that has no relationship to the political cause. It has no relationship at all to the philosophy of the person that they espouse. It has nothing to do with anything in the real world. It's political, and it's nuts. 877-876-PHIL is a world fit. What?
I can't let you get away with that.
Will you hang up on this guy?
No, I can't let you.
877-876-PHIL. When I tell you to hang up on a guy, hang up on him.
He insisted that I put him on the air.
I don't care, man. I'm the guy that runs. Coming up, it's Jeff Dowder to discuss Call of Duty 4, Call of Duty 4, which is engaging a lot of people in a heated conversation. 877-876-PHIL. Twitter.com, Phil Hendry Show, to follow along with us on Twitter.
Phil Hendry.